This is Ozarks at Large. Concerns about climate change are leading to conversations about how we travel, how we eat, and how we work. Add to the list, how we build. This past weekend, the University of Arkansas hosted a symposium dedicated to design excellence in timber and wood. One of the guests of the Faye Jones School of Architecture and Design was Andrew Waugh, a founding director of Waugh Thistleton Architects in London. Waugh and his colleagues championed the use of timber for construction as a way to minimize the impact on the planet. Sunday afternoon, Andrew Waugh came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk to us about his work. He says his firm takes environmental responsibility seriously.
Incredibly seriously. I mean, buildings, the maintenance, management, refurbishment, construction of buildings, it's nearly half of our global carbon emissions. So the architect bears a great deal of responsibility for, you know, for the future of the planet. Basically, you know, we have 11 years left to meet our Paris agreements or near agreements or to meet our Paris targets. We have 11 years left. And if nearly half of those are really down to an industry whose thought leader is the architect, then it really is behoove on the architect to take responsibility for that.
And this goes from materials used to construction, maintenance, everything.
It does. And we focus a lot on the materials that we build with and the process of construction. The reason why we do that is because we think it's imperative that we shift the focus of a building's kind of carbon footprint or carbon burden from the operations of that building, which is what everybody talks about. So the heating, the lighting, the air conditioning. And people measure the carbon of a building over 50, 60 years based on that. We don't have 50, 60 years. You know, we've got now, right now. And so we need to be making those massive carbon cuts in construction immediately, which means that we need to be looking at the materials and the process of construction.
We've been using concrete and steel and stone for a long time.
Yeah.
Should we get away from concrete, steel, and stone?
Absolutely. I mean, concrete is responsible for more than just the production of cement alone is responsible for more than 8% of greenhouse gas emissions. So it's the only individual thing that was mentioned in the IPCC report as a polluter. So cement itself is, you know, three times greater than airline travel as a polluter.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? And then you've got making that into concrete, transporting that. Then you've got steel on top of that. So actually, by the time you get to the production of concrete and steel combined, is more than 15%. And as we get better at doing everything else, then those percentages are going to become even more important.
What can we use instead?
Timber. So we use I think timber is the most obvious answer. I mean, we also, I think, need to re-examine our whole relationship with the planet. You know, so it really is about an understanding of where we get those materials from, you know, so that we stop scraping our materials off the surface of the planet and we think about things that we can grow again, that we can grow more of. You know, a tree, as it grows, when it reaches maturity, it sheds as much carbon as it absorbs. So we need to cut those trees down, put them in buildings, turn them into carbon stores, and then plant more trees. Mm. So, sustainable forestry, which is what we're talking about. We're not talking about clear-cutting old-growth forest. We're talking about sustainable forestry. Sustainable forestry increases forest growth because of the replanting that's done, because of the care that's taken of the forests. You avoid forest fires. The forests are better taken care of, so you don't have the same issues, with beetles, et cetera, et cetera. So if we take care, manage our forests sustainably, then there is easily enough harvestable timber to build all of our buildings.
Okay, so if architects are the thought leaders and they can move this direction, will construction industry follow?
That's been our experience. I mean, that the construction industry, in fact, you know the honest truth of it is, the construction industry and the development world are generally more excited and interested by this than architects. You know, architects are generally, you know, they think of themselves as kind of avant-garde lot, but actually they're not. You know, in my experience, they're a fairly conservative bunch. You know, it took them a while to come around to concrete 100 years or so ago. And now they've got there, then that's, you know, all their kind of visual index is based on concrete buildings and concrete forms. So to change that practice toward a new material, which offers a new kind of, it offers a new architecture, but also a new responsibility, then I think is, you know, as I said before, behove on architects to do that. But it, you know, it is definitely a challenge.
You take this responsibility seriously, but you also take proselytizing seriously, because this is how other architects can find out, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm pretty evangelical about this. You know, we kind of like, when we built our first tall timber building, we built a 9-story building in 2008. And when we built that, you know, it was really just a conversation that I'd been having with a few people in the studio about urban housing and about low carbon. And we didn't really realize the implications of what it was that we were doing. And as we began to understand that, because of the amount of questions and interest we were getting in that. And then you know, the beauty of talking about something is that you learn why you did it. Do you understand what I mean? So
yes.
It's like so much of what we do, I only know architecture, but so much of what I do in architecture, you know, you do through a kind of a design process, you know, which is kind of instinct and collage and brief, and you don't really understand some of the implications or the reasons why you did it in the first place. And then you finish doing it, and you're like, oh my goodness, that's why I did that. That was about, you know, and so the kind of the interest, the innovation for that really came through that sort of feeling of responsibility and understanding that as architects, we need to understand the implications of our actions and that we need to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
I want to ask you about a couple of projects you and your firm did. Murray Grove.
Yeah.
Right. So that's an 8-story.
9-story.
9-story.
Yeah.
Housing.
Yep. 9-story social housing and private for sale housing.
And it is made of?
Timber. Mass timber, so engineered timber, called cross-laminated timber, which is planks of a regular spruce tree, secondary grade planks, so the stuff that used to get pulped into paper. Mm-hmm. The planks are laid out, they're sprayed with a PV adhesive, so very less than 1% of the volume of the panel is adhesive, and then those layers are built up and formed into panels, which are, you know, say, approximately, I'm just trying to convert from metric to imperial in my head, and it's 3 times 16. So about 40 foot.
Right.
So about 40 foot by 12 foot wide. So massive panels. And then those panels are, depending what the job of that panel is, that's how thick they are. So anything from sort of 3 or 4 inches up to 2 foot thick. And that panel then goes into a cutting machine, and whatever the architect draws on their CAD program, mm-hmm. that same file goes to the factory, and that's how the panels are cut out. And then they arrive on site with all the windows cut out, with all the services chased into them, roof profile, whatever it is, and they come on the back of a truck, all piled up, like a kind of, you know, like a sort of a kid's model kit, all packed up, and then a couple of guys, in that case in Murray Grove, 4 guys built 9 stories in 27 days.
27 days?
27 days. No noise. No rubbish, yeah, and about 30 deliveries.
And it's safe, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is, I live in a house like that.
Okay.
So with two friends, three families bought a piece of land in London, and we built a 7-story building. We got 3 apartments in it, and then we sold off the lower floors for offices and that kind of thing. So I live in one of those buildings. I didn't want to be one of those people who kind of talk and talk and talk about it. You know, as we say in London, you know, if you talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk, right?
Yeah. Is timber more adaptable as well?
Yeah, certainly. I think that, you know,
flexible and...
Yeah, we're learning. I mean, we really are learning. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know what, I've cracked this. We're learning. We're learning about what kind of architecture this material can produce. And this is, you know, it's a time in the history of our species that is so incredibly important. And architects have such a major role to play in this. I mean, in many ways, kind of terrifying for our children, you know, what may be ahead for them. But there is an opportunity here to do something about it. And actually to create an architecture of real meaning. And I think that that's an incredibly exciting opportunity for us to grasp.
I want to ask you also about Bushy Cemetery, a Jewish cemetery.
Yeah.
And you, part of what you created there was made of rammed earth?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So what we did was, it was one of those kind of bizarre phone calls that you never get, you know, where somebody phoned us up, had seen our work and was interested in how we approached a brief, how we approached clients as well as sustainability. And somebody from the chief rabbi's office called me up and said, you know, would you be interested in building a Jewish cemetery? And I was like, yeah, definitely. We'd love to compete for that. And he went, oh, do you think you should compete? And I went, no, I didn't mean that exactly. I mean, yeah, we'd love to do that. So when we got this built, I mean, you know, I'm an urban architect, you know, I'm not, but I went to the countryside where the cemetery is. And, you know, me and this guy, Stephen, we stood in a field full of cabbages. And he said to me, so where do you think we should put the prayer halls? And I'm looking at a field of cabbages going, I don't have a clue.
It's something completely different,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, completely different. I mean, you know, usually my job is to kind of build buildings on a very specific kind of lot, pre-carved out lot. And I extrude that plan and get as many apartments or as big an office or health center or school or whatever it is onto that site. But to go onto an kind of big cabbage patch, basically, and say, right, where do we start here? But then, you know, things begin to fall into place. There's kind of like, you know, we had a site that fell 28 feet from one side to the other across about 15 acres. So big site. So we knew that there was going to be a lot of civil engineering. And I began, I guess, at the same time as, you know, in the studio drawing the buildings, I began to think about, you know, those trucks kind of plowing through, you know, one after another, taking that soil away from the site, dumping it somewhere else, coming back, you know, all that kind of, and thinking, and then thinking about, you know, visualizing the idea of loads more trucks coming in with loads more, you know, and it just kind of like, so began to research into thinking about rammed earth, thinking about kind of, I mean, one of the fascinating things about the Jewish faith for me, I'm not Jewish, and one of the fascinating things is that kind of, you know, is that duality that the faith has retained over centuries of a kind of Middle Eastern foundation, you know, from Israel, and a kind of like, and yet a very British nature to the community. So actually thinking about a kind of Middle Eastern construction technology seemed immediately appropriate. The other, I think, beautiful thing about the Jewish faith is how it organizes itself. So there's no, you know, you don't have a priest. I mean, I was brought up Catholic. There's nobody anointed by God to take care of you that you have to call father. You know, you hire a rabbi, you know, and if he doesn't sing as well as you want him to sing, you sack him, you know, you fire the guy. So right. So it's much more kind of democratic, actually, type, you know, faith based around a democratic organization, which is really rather lovely. And, you know, I think that, and also you don't have any typology. So there's no spires, there's no domes, there's no, you know, it's actually, you know, it's a basic shelter. And the shelter shouldn't detract from the kind of, from the seriousness of the occasion. It should perhaps add to the kind of, you know, to your sense of empathy within the occasion and all that kind of, but it doesn't have to be a specific shape. So when we started thinking about the forms of these buildings within the landscape, the idea that you would actually build the building from the earth that was around it to celebrate a physical body and a memory of a departed soul, the idea that you're about to, you see, the other thing in the Jewish faith is that you bury people in perpetuity. You know, you look after that graveside in perpetuity. So the Jewish faith promises to look after your grave. So once the cemetery is full, then you move on. And the cemetery that we have will last about 70 years, you know, hopefully around the same as me. So you kind of like, nobody's buried on top of each other, nobody's exhumed, that kind of thing. So that relationship with the soil, you know, from whence you came to where you will go, you know, even the word in Hebrew for soil is similar to the word for man, you know, it's kind of, so it's a very, and when you bury somebody, I lost a friend who was Jewish just after we completed the building, and I very, that connection to the earth, when you're filling the grave in, You know, when you're standing by the side of the grave with a shovel and you're filling that in, and then you go back to the prayer hall afterwards to say a prayer, you're covered in that soil, you know, and you're standing there and covered in the soil, surrounded by a building made of that soil. You know, the other thing about going to a funeral is that the kind of, you know, the professed process of going to a funeral is to celebrate the person that's died. And yet we all know that actually we spend a lot of the time when we're at a funeral thinking about our own mortality, you know, and what's going to happen to us. So actually to be surrounded by earth, to have very kind of sensorial, elemental kind of surrounding to you, I think is very important for that process.
Is it ever terrifying for you when you come, because you strike me as an incredibly curious and inquisitive person, but when you come up with these ideas, these concepts, these new projects, is there ever a moment of terror that, oh, what am I doing? Will this work?
Somebody asked me that. You know, one of the funny things is we were kind of like amusing anecdote is that when we first mooted this idea of round earth, we met with a UK contractor who professed to build rammed earth buildings. Mm-hmm. And we built a wall in the car park of the adjacent farm that's owned by the rabbi's office. And we built this wall, and then the chief rabbi and some of his staff were coming the next morning to have a look at the wall. And we had a massive rainstorm that night. And when we arrived in the car park, there was a big lump of mud. Just sat in the car park. And I'm standing in front of this lump of mud. The chief rabbi is looking at me going, "It will be all right, Andrew, won't it? It will be all right." And yeah, not a problem, not a problem. You know, because I've got like our planning consent, you know, from the local city, which says this is a rammed earth building, you know, and we're staring at a lump of mud, you know, and he's thinking, well, if I got to start burying people in about 8 months' time because I haven't got any more space left, do you know all that?
Right.
So there was a bit of pressure, I will say. But we had this wonderful engineer, and she... She just went online and she found this guy in Australia who was building rammed earth buildings in the Margaret River in southwestern Australia, which has not a dissimilar climate to the UK. She Skyped him. He happened to be on holiday in France. We flew him over and he arrived at our studio, you know, looking like Crocodile Dundee. I mean, I swear to God, like kind of, you know, sort of shorts and big boots and stuff and a hat and good day, like that to everybody. And he was just the most genius person. He was fantastic. He was so enthusiastic. And within 6 months, he had arrived on site with another Australian guy and a shipping container full of kind of specialist sort of formwork and that kind of thing. He arrived on site. He went down to the local unemployment center. He found four local lads. He trained them up in 2 days, and the six of them built four buildings in 3 months. It was just amazing to see. It was so exciting.
Are you encouraged about the future?
Whoa, that's a good one. I mean, you know what? I have kids, right? So I must be. I kind of, you know, I do. It's serious, and it's kind of, you know, just as I was coming out here from the UK, there was a report in the UK that the number of mammals in the UK has been reduced by 25% since 1970, when I was a kid, right? When I was, you know, growing up in the countryside outside of London. And, it, you know, you see it. You visibly see there are fewer birds in the sky. You know, there are less animals in the woods. And that's, you know, when I'm walking with my little girls, that's sad. You know, that makes me really upset. But, you know, I'm lucky enough to be a middle-aged white guy. So this is in my, you know, this is my job, you know, and I only mean that because, you know, I have a voice that can be heard, right? That's the truth of the situation. And I need to use that voice. I think that I wouldn't be able to forgive myself if I didn't use that voice, you know? So I am optimistic. I think we can do this. And I think that we can have, I think that we can, not only we can, you know, reduce the impacts of climate change, slow it down. I also think that this can produce a better society. And I think that this, you know, a more caring society, a more friendly, benevolent society. And I think that actually, you know, we could have a better future from this, you know, terrible crisis that we're in.
Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Andrew Waugh is a founding director of Waugh Thistleton Architects in London, and he was in Fayetteville this past weekend to participate in a symposium regarding design excellence in timber and wood, hosted by the Fay Jones School of Architecture and Design at the University of Arkansas and the U.S. Forest Service.